be seated.
Hi. Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. The first matter on this morning's calendar is the State of Minnesota versus Sue Vang. Counsel, you each have 15 minutes for your oral arguments, and the appellant will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Please adjust this, the stand as needed for your height, and you may proceed. And please introduce yourself prior to beginning your oral argument.
Excuse me. Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is John Donovan. I'm an assistant state public defender, and I represent the appellant in this case, Sue Vang. Mr. Vang was convicted under subdivision 1A1 of the animal fighting statute, which prohibits promoting, engaging in, or being employed in cockfighting. I raised two issues in my brief, and I want to be clear about what this case is about and what this case is not about. The first issue in this case is whether Mr. Vang engaged in the activity of cockfighting, which calls upon this court to interpret the animal fighting statute.
I have a question for you with regard to that.
Sure.
Because it is statutory interpretation, and do you think that statute with regard to engaging in is ambiguous or not?
No, I think we can just dive right into that. No, I think that the plain language of this statute, we can resolve this just based on the statute's plain language. This is not ambiguous. I think we sort of start with the definition that in some regards I think the state and I agree on, and that engaged is involved with. You involve yourself in the activity of cockfighting. But I don't think that is the end of the analysis at that point, because if that's just how we're interpreting that statute, it's going to render all the other parts of that statute just superfluous. They'll have no meaning. It just swallows it all.
Well, how do you define cockfighting?
I'm going to define cockfighting as two roosters fighting each other. I'm not sure that that's up for debate at this point.
I think we all agree on that.
Yes.
But is it? I mean, can you say it's pitting one animal against another? I mean, and in this case, it'd be a rooster.
I think it's sort of violently pitting against them so that they're actually fighting. I don't think that the two roosters that were found that were training in the cage were cockfighting because, you know, as the witnesses said, there was no way they could actually make contact with each other.
Well, except weren't they being pitted against each other? Isn't that the whole essence for the training? Is the one rooster in the cage is angry by the other rooster teasing, and he's pecking at him. I mean, isn't that pitting that rooster against the rooster that's outside the cage?
Pitting, sure. I think sort of two parts with that. One, the statute is violently pitting. And it's not just a wire cage. There's two levels of wires there. So neither one can make contact. So are they pitted against each other? Maybe. Are they violently pitted against each other? No, neither can harm the other. Neither can make contact with the other. Also, I think that language in the statute, the violent pitting, is to sort of cover, if we start at the beginning, we have dogfighting, I think, or cockfighting, then we have the other one. And then we get into violent pitting in case it's other animals that are being pitted against each other or maybe different types of animals. And I think that's where that sort of comes in. But I don't think that those birds in the basement were violently pitted against each other.
Even though the one in the cage was pecking at the other.
It was trying to peck, but it couldn't make contact.
About a matter of degree, though? I mean, they weren't drawing blood, at least as far as we know. Maybe with enough pecking, there would be blood. I don't know.
Well, the evidence showed that they couldn't do that.
I mean, you're drawing some lines here that I'm not sure the definition allows for.
I don't think that the definition of the word pitted necessarily allows for that. But that is not the language of the statute alone. It's not just pitted.
Well, I think you're going on the word violent.
Yes.
And isn't pecking at another rooster, and that's the intent of the exercise, isn't that?
It's to make the other bird aggressive, but not to have the other bird harm each other. These birds are not supposed to be fighting each other in a true cockfight, which is what we're talking about, which is the state's theory is what was going on here.
Well, as I understand your argument, the state... Your client might have been guilty of subdivision 4.
Yes.
Which is the training. And as I'm understanding your argument and from reading your brief, that's what perhaps was going on in the basement the day that the animal control officers came by.
Correct.
And so the state made a mistake because they chose the wrong subsection of the statute under which to charge your client.
Correct. That is it. I think that if they had charged him under 1A4, I would have to be making a very different argument before this court. And I think that that sort of training language also, Judge Hooten, sort of goes to what you're saying, is that that's training. That's what that is. They're not being violently pitted. They're being taught to be aggressive. That's the training. So if we say that that is what, you know, he's guilty of, then that still reads out 1A4. And so just to sort of circle back, if it's just involvement in cockfighting, general involvement, I think, I'm sorry.
Well, let me ask you this question. I mean, under your interpretation, are you saying that the first subdivision that was charged here, that only includes cockfighting where the two roosters are fighting each other? And does it have to be at an event? Or
yes. My argument is that subdivision 1A1 is punishing the person's actual presence and involvement in the actual cockfight.
In other words, he has to be present at the cockfight.
They're present at the cockfight.
Correct. Your interpretation.
And they're handling the bird. I don't know if there's a referee in cockfighting or some sort of separating, but it's that involvement. Because if we look at the rest of the statute, that's the only conduct that's not covered by the statute.
Okay, but what about the circumstantial evidence that was found here, that where you have the paddle, you have, apparently there's some kind of steroid. I mean, there's all this evidence there that is evidence of actual cockfights. I mean, can't that be utilized to find an engagement in cockfighting under that first subdivision?
That's certainly evidence that he's involved with training. And I think that we would know that that's evidence of training just by actually looking at subdivision 3 of the statute, which says if you have birds with fresh wounds and you have drugs and paraphernalia, that creates a presumption of training.
But how can you train two roosters to fight without actually letting them fight once in a while? Wouldn't that necessarily involve some engagement in cockfighting?
But according to the statute, you'd have to have a method where you're training without them actually fighting, because otherwise that word training, again, it loses any meaning. Then it just, subdivision 1A1 is enveloping 1A4, and then training is no longer an effective word. And this entire statute, when you're interpreting it, needs to be effective. And the conduct that's not covered in the very specific language throughout the statute is the language about being there and actually participating in the cockfight.
Well, let me just use a hypothetical.
Sure.
Because we have to ascertain what the intent of the legislature was. Maybe the intent of the legislature was to make this as thorough as possible so you can get every aspect of people involved in cockfighting. And I suppose if all of this other apparatus, the ring and the paddle and the other things hadn't been found at the site, your argument would probably be a stronger argument.
Mm-hmm.
But here, with all that evidence, it wasn't the question for the jury whether this would fall under subdivision 1. That not only was their training, but there were actual cockfights at the premises.
I think that the circumstances proved are also consistent with the hypothesis that there wasn't. I think that is there a rational hypothesis that he was engaged in cockfighting, as I'm even arguing for the statute to be read? Yes. I think that that is a rational hypothesis. But at this point, we're not deferring to the jury's choice of that hypothesis. And there are other rational hypotheses that are available that are inconsistent with guilt under 1A1.
Well, let me ask you this then. Let's use the circumstantial evidence test. If, in fact, that's a reasonable hypothesis, but another alternative reasonable hypothesis, what would it be? I mean, if there's another reasonable one, why would he have all of that equipment that can only be utilized for cockfighting there at the premises if he wasn't engaging in cockfighting? What alternative rationale would there be for that?
Because he's training these birds. Again, under a sort of general proposition, if just sort of putting my argument aside, is he involved in cockfighting in some capacity? Yes, he's involved in cockfighting. I'm not going to pretend that he's not. But so are people who host the event. So are people who sell the tickets. So are people who buy a ticket. So are people who are somehow on the guest list and go. They're all involved in cockfighting. And there's very specific language in this statute that punishes those very specific things. So all that's left for engages in to mean is to be actually there and directly involved. And so is it, again, is it a rational hypothesis that he's engaged in cockfighting? Sure. But I think the question, and I'm not trying to be flip when I ask a question, is what cockfight? Where was it? When was it? Was he the person involved? We know that these birds were most likely being transported. Is he the one who's transporting them and standing in the ring, or is someone else doing that? Again, if this had been charged under 1A4 about training, I wouldn't have this argument. And I think that the entire purpose of 1A4 is these situations where you go to a house and you see a rolled up ring and you see one bird being taught to be aggressive and you see these bloody travel cases and the steroids and all of this paraphernalia, they go, boy, that's sure hard to prove that you were actually there at a cockfight being involved in the cockfight. What we should do is have a provision about if you're possess these animals, if you're training these animals. That's how this case should have been charged. If that's how it is, my argument's entirely gone. But it wasn't charged that way. It was charged under engages on cockfighting. And that word has to mean something more specific than just general involvement in cockfighting.
Well, I think you touched on the on or about argument.
Mm-hmm.
And is it, as is argued by the respondent here, is it enough that we have a general date? We know that we have some roosters with clear wounds that are recent, that which, according even what your arguments today, could have only occurred during a cockfight. I mean, if there's no cockfight, if you're saying, you know, that this training doesn't involve cockfighting, then why isn't, why does the date matter if we know it's within, if it's about the date that was actually selected to charge out the complaint? We know it occurred within the vicinity of that date.
We know that there was a cockfight somewhere in there, or probably. I don't know that we know for sure. I don't know how roosters are trained for cockfighting. I don't know how bloody they can get. But I think the sort of the problem with the state's argument about when they sort of go off on date being a material ingredient, the issue in all of those cases is sort of everyone was on the same page. They knew what act they were talking about. It was a matter of what day it was. I think in one of them it was an indecent exposure and he pled guilty and then later sort of said, it couldn't have been that day. You know, I was in Toledo or something. And they said, well, you know the, you know, exposure that wasn't decent that we're talking about. All these who sort of know the concrete act that they're talking about, and it's just a matter of, oh, but it's a different day. In Poole, it was a doctor who was sexually abusing patients, and they said, this is what he did. It was at an appointment. I don't remember if it was June, July, or August. And so they're saying the date doesn't matter there because no one's disputing the act that you did. It's when did it happen. And here we have some sort of nebulous cockfight that occurred at some point. Did it occur 5 to 7 days ago? Did it occur 1 to 2 days ago? Did it occur, as the prosecutor is arguing in closing, way back 6 weeks earlier? We don't have a sort of concrete event to say, okay, so the date doesn't matter because we know what we're talking about. And the reason I sort of focused on date in my first issue about then engaging in cockfighting is because, again, they didn't walk into a cockfight.
Well, except that there's the veterinarian's testimony that the wounds on the roosters were 1 or 2 days old, up to maybe 5 to 7 days old. So that would be on or about that July date.
Well, I think it gets a little squishy in that regard because it wasn't that every rooster had a wound that was 1 to 2 or maybe 5 to 7. Some had 1 to 2. Some were 5 to 7. Some had old scars. Some had, you know, something that they said was fresh. And that's where we start getting into the unanimity problem of, is the jury agreeing about one cockfight? That he engaged in one specific cockfight, or was it this cockfight? And again, not to be flip, but what cockfight? When was it? Where was it? And was he involved?
The rooster was with 1 to 2 day old injuries, weren't identified as victim one or victim two.
It's, sure.
I mean, they were all treated as a flock, I suppose. I don't know. I'm like you. I don't know about cockfighting.
But they did identify this rooster. I know I have in my brief. I line all 7 of the roosters. This rooster was this. This rooster was that. And these are different. And there's no one rooster where it's throughout. There's this ongoing thing. And again, I don't know how roosters get bloody in training. We know that he was perhaps shaving feathers. Is that what it was? What's for...
But would you agree that if, in fact, cockfighting, the actual cockfighting is part of the training, that that's an engagement in cockfighting?
I'm sorry?
That's probably a trap, so I'd be careful if I were you.
I only have 30 seconds to just think about it, and I can get around it. I don't know. I think that if we say that engaging in cockfighting is part of training, then training loses any effectiveness in the statute, and that word engage has to be interpreted as best as possible.
Well, and I want to ask you about that, too, because do we necessarily have to say if it could fall under more than one of the provisions that that's a mistake? In other words, the conduct... I mean, there's a number of provisions that we have to interpret, and there may be more than one applicable provision. Does that necessarily mean that the legislature didn't intend that?
I'm assuming I'll be allowed to answer that one.
You have
if I may.
Yes.
I think we're sort of talking about two different things. I don't think it's controversial to say that your conduct can constitute more than one offense, but that's in a sort of charging sense. This is a statutory interpretation sense. So when you're interpreting the words of the statute, in order to make the entire statute effective within the principles of, you know, the intrinsic canons of trying to, can we read the plain language in a way that it's all effective, then it has to be something different. Then that word, unless it's impossible or would lead to an absurd result, must be interpreted in a way where you could violate one of those provisions without necessarily violating another. Could you violate multiple? Sure, but if we're going to give that word a definition, it should be a definition where you can do that, but not something else.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
We'll have 5 minutes for a rebuttal.
May it please the court, counsel, John Schmidt, Assistant Hennepin County Attorney on behalf of the state of Minnesota. This court should affirm the jury verdict because the date is not an essential element of the offense for which appellant was convicted. Appellant's argument today, as we heard today and in the brief, was that the police have to walk into an event and catch somebody while a cockfight is currently occurring in order to be guilty of the subdivision for which he was charged.
Well, let me ask you this. Why did they have the two provisions? Because he's basically saying the state mischarged it. Why have the differing provisions? Does it make the possession and possession and training provision superfluous?
Well, there could be a training, a scenario where it's only training, and there could be a scenario where it's only cockfighting. For example, a person who shows up to a cockfighting event is engaged in cockfighting, even though that person doesn't own any birds, and that person is gambling on the event that is happening at that time. That person would be guilty of the subdivision of which the appellant is charged. The appellant would be guilty under either subdivision because he has the birds. It's clear that he's training these birds, and it's clear from the circumstantial evidence that cockfighting had occurred and that he had been engaged in that and had participated in that. And to take appellant's argument that you have to be found at the event in order to be guilty writes the on or about language out of the complaint. And this goes to throughout the proceedings, on or about was used. It was used in the complaint. It was used in the jury instructions, and it was used on the verdict form. At no point were there any objections to any of that. And that I argued about forfeiture because this is a post-conviction challenge to the sufficiency of the complaint. But there's also the ideas that it wasn't objected to in the jury instructions, and it wasn't objected to in the verdict form. And so the jury was allowed to go beyond the specific date that was challenged. The argument here today was that everybody was on the same page about the other cases that I cited with the on or about. But everybody was on the same page for this as well because on or about was used throughout these proceedings and there was no pretrial challenge to the sufficiency of the complaint to say that is not specific enough to give us notice of when this occurred.
Mr. Schmidt, do we narrowly construe criminal statutes?
Yes.
And isn't Mr. Donovan's strongest argument that, you know, at some point prior to the trial, the trial prosecutor got nervous enough that he decided to try to amend the complaint to, include a provision that arguably is more pertinent to the circumstantial evidence in this case? Would that be a fair statement?
Yes.
And the judge said no, and I actually had one of our excellent clerks look into that, and it looked like the main reason the judge said no was because this was too close to trial, and the defense was arguing, well, you know, that's going to change the whole theory of the case, and, you know, whether that was the right decision or the wrong decision, you know, the amendment was denied, and everyone decided that they were going to live and die on this subdivision. So if there are other subdivisions that are arguably more specifically on point for these facts, then why isn't Mr. Donovan correct when he argues, look, those are the ones that he should have been charged with. You didn't. It's up to you to charge them with whatever you want. That's not how the case was tried. And so then, as a matter of law, you know, you don't get to convict him on this one based on the evidence that you had. Now, why is that position wrong, Mr. Schmidt?
I agree that other statute would allow, the other subdivision would allow for a conviction in this case, but that doesn't mean that the statute and provision under which he was charged did not have sufficient evidence in order to affirm this conviction.
So what then should we look at as the sufficient evidence that most applicably applies to engages in, which it's my understanding, well, do we all agree that engages in means directly involved, or does it mean more than that?
It means more than that.
Okay, what does it mean then?
Under State versus Mack, this court's decision of 2018, it says, to employ or involve oneself, to take part in, to embark on. And Mack also says, to involve oneself or become occupied, to participate. So it's broader than that narrow definition. And so under State versus Mack, under the definition of what engage means, and granted that is a different, that's using dictionary definitions to interpret engage under a different statute. So there is a difference there. But it's not as narrow as just that you have to be participating, involved in right now. And the on or about language gives time and a fair amount of time for the jury to decide what is the evidence here that shows he was in some ways occupied or participated in or took part in cockfighting. And with that, we have the ring that exists, and there is blood on the carpet, and there's a ring that shows that you put the birds in and they fight in this ring. It shows there are transport boxes that the birds would be moved to a different location that had blood all over them in there. There were razors, there were paddles, but then there's a veterinarian who testified that there's evidence of cockfighting with these fresh wounds within 2 days up to 5 to 7 days before. The animal control officer testified about, in her training and experience, there was evidence of cockfighting, that these birds had participated and engaged in cockfighting. So from all of that circumstantial evidence, the jury had sufficient evidence before them to decide that at some point recently, the appellant had, under the definition of engaged in cockfighting. And so there would certainly be evidence to convict under the different subdivision, but there was also evidence to convict under the subdivision for which he was charged, that he did recently, on or about this specific date, engage in cockfighting. And even under the narrow version, which is proposed by the appellant, that it has to participate at that one day, we still contend there was sufficient evidence, given that there was the two birds who were currently engaged in the violent pitting against one another. Now, the word violent doesn't necessarily limited to that they're fighting. And the statute doesn't say that it's fighting in terms of pitting one another. It doesn't say that the birds have to harm each other. It just says it has to be a violent pitting against one another. And what they saw and what the pictures that were presented to the jury showed were that though there was one bird who was extremely aggressive and there's another bird who was trying to peck at him. Now, that's evidence of training, but that's also evidence of violent pitting against one another.
Is actual cockfights part of the training?
I'm not sure.
Any evidence of that in the record?
Not that I recall that actual cockfighting would be part of the training. I mean, what we saw there and with the two birds where they're violently pitted against one another, that's certainly evidence of training, and it's also evidence of the violent pitting of one another. The evidence of that maybe the cockfighting could be part of training if you only believe that he was training the birds, but there were these fresh wounds. So the fresh wounds would suggest that there is circumstantial evidence that those birds had fought. Now, whether it was in an actual cockfighting ring at the time or whether those birds were training at the time, they were being violently pitted against one another. Unless the court has any other questions, I will rest on my brief. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Judge.
Mr. Donovan, before you start your rebuttal, I have a question for you. It goes to the on or about language.
Sure.
My understanding of the trial strategy in district court was the defense was we were using these birds for cultural ceremonies.
Yes.
It didn't have to go with cockfighting. That's not what we're involved in at all.
I think in closing, their argument became a little clear that it was, there's not enough evidence of actual cockfighting here. I think it was twofold. I think they certainly leaned into the cultural purposes more, but I think there was a little evidence of both.
Did the trial counsel have a cultural expert testify at trial on this?
They did, yes.
You got someone to say that cockfighting is part of a religious ceremony?
Oh, I'm sorry. I misunderstood your question. There was someone talking about the significance of roosters within the culture, not within cockfighting. I apologize.
No problem.
I sort of just want to start, though, with what the state started with.
That'd be a religion I would love to learn more about.
Yeah. When the state said that if, someone walks into a place where they're at a cockfight and they've gambled on a cockfight, then they're guilty under this subdivision, I'm just going to flat disagree with. I think if someone is, again, if it's general definition of engaged, sure. But it needs to be more narrow because being present at a cockfight is already punished under 1B. That's being there. Gambling on a cockfight, assuming you won, I think would be employed. If you lost, you might be able to get them another way. But I don't think that just saying any involvement with cockfighting is 1A1 because it renders all of the rest of the statute sort of just superfluous. And again, I don't know how animals are trained. I don't know if there is cockfighting involved. But I do know that Subdivision 3 of the statute says that if you see birds with fresh wounds, that creates a presumption that they're trained. So that's training. And cockfighting must be something else.
But the only way the birds could get those wounds is by cockfighting, right?
I don't know. I mean, because there was shaving going on, there are razors involved. I'm not entirely sure. But is it possible they got the wounds through a cockfight? Again, yes. Where was the cockfight? When was the cockfight? And was Mr. Vang the person there handling these birds in the cockfight? Or is he a bird trainer? We just don't know these.
We assume we get to the alternative hypothesis.
Mm-hmm.
What's the alternative rationale for why he had all that cockfighting equipment?
Because he's training the birds.
But a ring. I mean, I understand that you've got an argument on the cage.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you explain the ring and the blood and the paddle and all the other things that are clearly the only use for these are for cockfights?
Sure, but where is this cockfight? Because I don't think it's being held in the basement because everyone who was in that house said, I could not stay in that basement. That basement smelled. So there are transport cases. That ring can be transported to somewhere else. And is Mr. Vang the person who's transporting that ring and transporting these birds and in the ring handling them, or is someone else? He's clearly a trainer. Again, walking in on a cockfight is going to be very hard. But that's why they have this other language and they have these presumptions so that situations like this can be punished.
Let me ask you this, Mr. Donovan. Let's say... I'm here, I'm looking at the promote language.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say I'm a pimp, and here are the facts. I pick up young women at bus stations. I bring them to a house. I make sure they can't leave the house. there are there's 20 beds in the house. I pay them. But the one thing I don't do is advertise in the local newspaper saying, come to Frank's House of Prostitution. Mm-hmm. And on the day in question, the police barge in, and there is no specific activities of sexual conduct going on, but I'm there, and I've done the things I've indicated, and the prostitutes are all there. Am I promoting prostitution, even though I didn't advertise, by doing all those things?
I'm going to be frank with you in that I'm not entirely familiar off the top of my head of promotion of prostitution.
Just using plain dictionary language that you used in your brief. Am I promoting prostitution?
I don't think you're promoting prostitution in that case.
Because why?
Because there wasn't the advertising taking place.
So promote can't mean encourage? I mean, I don't know. I don't have the dictionary in front of me, but let's say I can find it. You know, let's say the great clerk who did all the great work on the looking for the amendment can find a dictionary somewhere that says promote means encourage. Mm-hmm. I mean, isn't there an argument that your client was promoting cockfighting based on the circumstantial evidence that was presented to the jury?
No, I think that these are different statutes involving very different scenarios.
No,
I think in your hypothetical, kidnapping is going to be something that definitely jumps out to me. But I think within the context of sort of animal fights.
Well, you know, the county attorneys were too dumb to charge me with kidnapping either, so they just charged me with promoting prostitution. Let's say it's not Hennepin County. Let's say it's, I don't know, a county to be named at a later date.
Sure. I don't think that you would be guilty of promoting prostitution.
Under those facts.
Under those facts. I see it, if I just briefly, I know my time's up, almost more of a cockfighting Don King in this case. Of someone who is maybe arranging these fights, someone who's letting people know, hey, there's a cockfight at Sal's house at 6 o'clock. That sort of promotion, that sort of advertisement, that sort of building it up would be in this case. So unless the panel has any further questions.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much.
We will take the matter under advisement. Oh,